Queer Rights Sessions, QWS Podcast, in partnership with Blarney Books and Art in Port Ferry. I'm your host, Rob, aka RWR McDonald.
And I'm Jonathan Butler, and this is a Words and Nerds spin-off series.
Thanks, Danny! We're coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people, and I would like to pay my respects to their elders, past and present.
Each month, QWS Podcast will bring you reviews,
shout-outs of LGBTQIA+ writers,
and feature an interview with a queer writer from our rainbow communities.
And now on with the show. Troy Hunter is an adult and YA fiction writer whose short stories have appeared in a variety of publications and journals. He lives in Melbourne and works as a marketing and communications consultant. Gus and the Missing Boy is his first novel. Welcome to the podcast, Troy.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Absolute pleasure. Now, Troy, we start with an opening question, which is, how has your work influenced your identity?
It's a tricky question. I feel like it's almost the other way round. It's more like, how has my identity influenced my writing, I suppose? So looking at Gus and the Missing Boy, I've got this quite complex family background. I wasn't kidnapped as a kid or anything, but it does mean that I have thought about the nature of family, of nature versus nurture, and kind of like those nuances around being adopted and also how parents aren't perfect, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of my background. And so obviously with Gus and the Missing Boy, when you're looking at a crime novel that's talking about a kid being kidnapped, you can see the connection. I also think maybe growing up gay in the country had its own sort of challenges, and, you know, times are pretty different now, thank God. But I think a lot of those sort of teenage feelings about being gay and coming out and everything like that kind of remain. So there's, I guess, an element of that in the writing. So I guess to summarize, it's like the writing is influenced by my identity, but writing about this stuff helps me navigate my thoughts on various things. It's kind of goes in both directions.
Thank you very much. And congratulations on Gus and the Missing Boy. I absolutely loved it.
Thank you.
It's complex, but a page turner at the same time and easy to read, which sounds simple, but if you trying to write something which is easy to read, it's actually really hard to do. So, no, congratulations. I am, for our listeners, just going to read the blurb, what we're talking about here. So, Gus and the Missing Boy. True crime buff Gus Green has always felt out of place in the world. He's overweight, gay, his injured mum's primary carer, and he only has two real friends, Sporty Kane and Feisty Shell, who are both dealing with their own problem. Gus's life is flipped on its head one day when he finds a missing person's website with a digitally aged picture of a missing boy who looks eerily like him. Could he be a kidnapping victim? It would explain a lot about his patchy background, but what would that make his mum, his kidnapper? As Gus and his friends dive into the mystery, their investigation reveals more questions than answers. Can they unravel the case before his world falls apart? And what will they do if they find the truth is too much to handle? Gus and the Missing Boy is published by Wakefield Press and out now. I'm a huge fan of Veronica Mars and teen sleuths.
Nancy Drew.
Nancy Drew, yes. So it was so much fun to be with teenage sleuths. I think they're the best because, you know, there's no boundaries, which is fantastic. And I think you played with that really beautifully. I don't want to give any spoilers, so really want to, but I won't. So congratulations again. In an acquisition article, I quote you as saying, "The idea behind this story came to me when I stumbled onto a website of missing children and wondered what would happen. I found my own face there. Got me thinking about identity and who we would be if our identity was taken away. I also wanted queer fat kids to be heroes of their own story, not the sassy friends or sidekicks main character." Applause. There's a lot to unpack there. One thing we always get asked as writers and authors is if you are the main character. So how much of you is in Gus?
Oh, without giving away spoilers, I suppose. I'm particularly with a debut novel, I'm sure that the main character and the writer are pretty linked. Yeah, I wasn't kidnapped as a child. There are various things that Gus goes through that aren't lived experiences that I've had, but there are certain sort of connections. Like I said, it's a little hard to talk about. I can't talk about specifics without giving things away. But yeah, there's enough. There was enough. I was a fat gay kid growing up in the country, and so there's certainly that kind of aspect to it. So yeah, and I think some of those, I don't know, like when you're a teenager, you're trying to figure out your place in the world and who you are and everything like that. So there's like who you are, and then there's all of the other sort of layers around it. Gay thing is one thing, but also any other sort of family complexity around you. So yeah, it's Gus is, not a million miles away from me, but probably less like me than the reader might expect.
Excellent. And I also think one of the great things about this book is, it's set and Gus and his family and neighbors. You've given us heroes from low socioeconomic. I think you portray that really authentically and fantastic. And yeah, it'd be good to see more of that. Is that something when you were writing that you were conscious of what was out there?
Not so much what was out there in other books, but I often think about how that stuff is portrayed TV, and it kind of comes to the fat kid thing too. Like you watch a lot of TV and it often seems to be set in this almost mythical middle class America stuff with insanely skinny girls and fit guys. And so it was something that was on my mind, I suppose. That people can be friends from sort of different backgrounds. So,
And also very large houses with incredible homeware and art and furnishings.
it's like that wasn't my lived experience. We were poor. So I probably, it's interesting you bring it up. The more I think about it, the more I think, yeah, it probably is there portraying different like that. Yeah.
If you're writing, what comes first for you? Is it character or plot or even a situation when you get that idea?
With this book, it was very much coming up with an idea and then sort of thinking about how that would work. So, as I sort of alluded to in that article, look, this was about 20 years ago. I found this website and I was looking for stuff related to work. So it really was literally stumbling on it. And yeah, and I could just see pages and pages and pages of these missing kids. And you'd see that, say, Janine was kidnapped at 3, and you could see that parents had paid for the photos to be aged every year. So it was like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And so, if she'd been kidnapped 10 years ago, there were photos right up to the age that she would be now. And so it just struck me as profoundly sad because there were so many pages of them. But I was also just struck thinking, what if, what if I found a photo of me here? What would that mean? And that sense of, what would happen if your identity started to unravel? What would you think? What would you feel about that? And then because I'm an Agatha Christie addict, I tried to also think about how you could turn that into much more of a sort of a mystery, a kind of who done it and a why done it. And so, yeah, those sort of things came together. So to answer your question, in this case, it was a particular situation and a good idea, I felt, and it sat in my head for like, 10, 12 years. More normally, the other writing that I've done tends to be more about I'll come up with a great character or a character idea, and I'll just think, what would they be like if I put them in this situation or that situation? But this one, it was the sort of concept first, if you know what I mean.
Fantastic. So I love, like, you do characters so well, and I absolutely love Shal and Hot Kane. So how did they come to be? Where did they just sort of appear on the page, or?
I guess they're sort of reflections of other parts of my personality, plus some traits from friends I had as a teenager. So any of my friends listening to this wouldn't, they might see, a couple of friends might see bits, but I don't have two friends like them, but I do have friends that have aspects of that. And I liked this back then, but I like the idea that very different people can be friends. You don't have to be the same.
Yeah, just loved scenes when they were all together and doing the mystery solving. It was fantastic. So how long was you mentioned sort of 10 years or more. So how long did the story take from idea to the published book we have now?
Well, the idea itself, like I said, sat in my head for years, and I thought, oh, I must do something with it. I mean, I'm not joking, like, this was the late 90s. I worked in corporate for years and it was nutty hours, and I just found that I never had the time to write properly. And so it was only about 7 or 8 years ago that I changed careers, started to work part-time, and that's when I started to think about writing a book seriously. So not just, pottering about with it, but taking on a proper book, like a book length project, and doing that. So yeah, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago. But when I wrote the first draft of this, it was an adult book. It was set in the 80s because it was much easier to kidnap people in the 80s. Not speaking from experience, but there was no internet, no social media, even things like police records between police stations, let alone different states. They weren't networked and connected. Neither were services, government services, or anything like that. So it was a lot easier to take someone and forge a new identity back then. And also, the book was told from two different characters' point of view. And so for me, it was quite complex and it wasn't quite working. But what happened is I went to one of those serendipity moments. I went to this kind of pitching with the publishers session at the Wheeler Centre here in Melbourne. And, the place was packed. And so I managed to be standing in the wrong queue. So I thought I was in the queue for, adult fiction to pitch this book to a publisher. And it was only when I got really close that I realized the sign that had been obscured actually said young adult. So, and I'd already been in the queue for like 20 minutes, so 30 minutes or something. And so I quickly had to reconfigure the pitch in my head, and I pitched it to the person, and they seemed really interested and gave me their card and said, send the full thing. And so I basically spent the next few weeks rewriting it really quickly and probably clumsily, as a YA book, and then gave it to them, sent it to them, to discover that they'd left the company. So I didn't get a book deal out of that because it would have been a good story if it was. But what it did do is I don't think I would necessarily have thought about making it a YA book if I hadn't been in that unusual situation, I suppose. But as I rewrote it, suddenly everything became easier. Like the 80s details, because I didn't have to write about any of that. Like some of it was probably really clumsy. Having two people's points of view, most YA that I've read tends to be the protagonist's point of view and it's first person. And so suddenly everything became easier and the book became a lot better from having one point of view, contemporary, and I was able to just kind of get on with the story. When you're telling a story in the past, it's kind of tricky and clumsy, and sometimes you have to hide the fact that the narrator probably does know what's happened. So it's hard to, when you're trying to do a mystery, it's hard to hide things when there's a voice that probably does know the answer. So following Gus through it, you only experience it through his point of view, and you're experiencing it in real time. So again, it just made it easier, structurally easier, and I think more interesting to read, hopefully.
So that's amazing. So you did all that reworking and discovery that this is the way the story should be. So how did you get to a
Yeah.
published book?
I started to enter it into competition. So, I sort of, in my mind, I feel like there's three ways to get published in this country. It's sort of like, I guess you pitch to a publisher, you pitch to an agent, or you win something and get noticed. And so I started entering it into things. And eventually I got a place in the Hachette Manuscript Development Program. So I don't think it exists anymore, but I think there were like 8 or 10 of us that got chosen, and we had this sort of weekend up in Queensland. And yeah, and so you meet publishers and editors and agents and different things like that, and they explain the industry to you. They give you feedback. And yeah, it was really, really good. And so at that event, part of that program, I met Jane Novak, who became my agent. So I had sort of half an hour with her, and we just kind of chatted away. And then right at the end, I said, "Oh, we should probably talk about the book." And she said, "Oh, I love it." I said, "Oh, great." And so,
Brilliant.
but we got on and
Yep.
we kind of understood one another, I think, and one another's values, I suppose. And so, yeah, so she became my agent. And then she started to do the agent thing of sending it round. And this all coincided weirdly with the beginning of COVID. So
Wow.
it was a really strange sort of protracted period where, but I mean, that's COVID, isn't it? The whole thing was like drawn out and yet weirdly lost in time,
Yeah.
particularly for us in Melbourne, who had, 99 lockdowns. So, there was just kind of this period where it was going out and back. I know it was a time where publishing was struggling, and I do feel like less debuts were probably published because publishers just needed to make money to keep the lights on. I'm not saying that's the reason it wasn't picked up, but so, and so,
No,
sorry.
you're absolutely right. Like it was so uncertain. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I must admit, I probably was knocked back by at least five or six publishers. And I was starting to come to that moment where I was thinking, actually, I finished a book. Like I actually finished it.
Yeah, huge.
Maybe, yeah, that's a big achievement. Maybe
Absolutely.
enough for me. And I genuinely think, I just think it is, because I think so many people feel like they have a book in them, but maybe don't do anything about it. Or there's so many people that have got like a book they started or half a book, but they've never been able to finish it.
Yep.
And so having finished it, I thought that might the most that I achieve with this. And yeah, I was fine with that. Yeah, but then I got the deal with Wakefield. So that made me very happy.
That's great. What a fantastic origin story. Like it's a, no, it's amazing. But also, like you say, that's that serendipity thing. Like if it hadn't been for being in the wrong queue, then wouldn't have been YA, then you know.
Like adult crime fiction market is so flooded, as you know. And unless you've got a really unique angle, which you do have, but you think about people like Richard Osman or Benjamin Stevenson, they're coming up with really unique angles, and they're the sorts of books that are kind of breaking through, I suppose. And so the YA thing was a gift for me because there isn't a lot of YA crime at all. And
No,
so,
and you've got very unique protagonist and that grouping of Gus and Shell and Kane, that trio, which is they're unique and they're characters that you want to follow, and I'm hoping that they are going to have another case in the future. Fingers crossed.
you never know. I've certainly done a lot of planning around another case, but I think with many things, as you'd know, with sequels, it can be pretty tricky to sell a sequel. And certainly, yeah. So I guess it'll depend how well Gus does as to whether they get another outing or not.
Fingers crossed. And listeners, if you can, it's like a fundraiser. You've got to help Gus get another case. Do you feel any type of expectation of being a debut author, but any expectation above that that's been placed on you because of your age at this stage? And maybe you don't because, you know, books just come out.
Yeah, not Not really. No.
Good, good.
I feel like, marketing advice and everything has kind of pushed the queer angle, which is fine because I think it works really well for a queer audience, but it's not, the story's not really centered around that much broader. But marketing's marketing. You need a few angles
Yes,
to
but you'd hope
cover.
it was sort of covering
Yeah.
this. I mean, that's only at its heart, like it's a mystery novel, and you've got a queer protagonist, and of course it's gonna have that queer lens.
But yeah,
But
it's not a coming out story. It's not a story about homophobia or anything like that. It's nothing like Schitt's Creek, but it's almost like Schitt's Creek in the sense that there's a gay character there, but it's not a political statement. They're
The
not
look.
a channel for different points of view or anything like that. So yeah, they're just someone that happens to be gay.
Yeah, who's solving this incredible mystery? So, with that crime fiction space, is that something you're interested in staying within for the sort of foreseeable, or just
Yeah,
always sort of
yeah.
comes along?
Like as long as I can remember, I've been reading crime books. And so it always sort of started with, the three investigators, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, then kind of, I guess, more as a teenager into Agatha Christie deeply, which still sort of remain. And so there's certainly an element of that kind of cozy crime that I really like and still appeals to me. And I obsessively watch crime shows. So, yeah, the answer is yes. I very much sort of see myself in the crime space. I've been working on an adult crime novel that's a certain way along and also working on a sequel to Gus. So, both of them, they're sort of happening at the same time. And I think depending on how Gus goes, one will get more focused than the other. But ultimately, I think it's always about crime because you have a protagonist and you've got to throw big tricky things at them to create proper tension and dilemma, etc., etc. And a crime is a brilliant kind of inciting incident to then send them off in all of these different directions. And I just love that kind of puzzle element of books like Agatha Christie, that sort of who done it, why done it, but I particularly love it when the answer is so intrinsically linked to character. So it's not just a case of, oh, I'll pick someone. And often in these books, everyone's got a motive, everyone's lying about something, and you just see the detective unpick all of the different lies, and what you're left with is who done it. But so there's an element of that. I guess I've taken all the usual sort of crime tropes, but I love crime writing, so that's very much kind of where I see myself writing for the foreseeable.
Fantastic. That's great. That's really exciting. We need more. More of you, Troy. So what is your hope for Gus and the missing boy being out in the world?
So for younger audiences, I'd sort of hope that they take away these strong messages about friendship, finding your tribe, seeing that talking about mental health issues and things like that is important, and being different is okay. I also, because that makes it sound really heavy, I also hope that they think it's fun. And maybe this will be their gateway drug into reading more mystery and crime, particularly things like Agatha Christie, which I think has an extraordinary large teenage readership. So yeah, I don't know many people who read Agatha Christie who came to her as an adult. It feels like everyone did as a teenager. But more broadly, I would also say that Gus being out in the world, I always hoped it would appeal to an adult audience, an older audience. And I'm really finding that's the case, which is really making me happy. So I've had, great feedback from people from all ages. I think I mentioned to you before, like someone, a 69-year-old woman was telling me how wonderful it is and when can I write more, just yesterday. So,
That's brilliant.
yes, that's my hope for Gus being out in the world.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, we haven't even touched on one of the things I really loved about it was the celebration of being yourself and that acceptance of, when you are being your authentic self. and how wonderful that is. And also it is very funny. A question we ask all our guests is a writing question. Any advice or top tips for aspiring writers or storytellers?
I don't know that I have great advice for anyone, but going back to something I said before, I feel like the best advice I could give is just finish something, because just by finishing a book or a short story or a novella or whatever you're working on, just by finishing it, you're streets ahead of most of the population who maybe aren't able to do that. So yeah, the first bit would definitely just be finish something, because it will give you that great sense of achievement. It's a whole thing, so hopefully you'll feel confident to show it to someone else, and that sort of feedback can be really valuable. The only other bit of advice, I suppose, is that if you're an aspiring writer, I'd say find yourself a writing group. Like, there's something in the power of the sort of friendships and the feedback mechanism that writing groups provide that I think is absolutely invaluable. And it also means you just got people to have those conversations with that you can't have with your friends and family. And, you know, they don't want to sit there, listen to, I'm not that you're going to bang on about the Oxford comma or anything, but it's just, you know, you can't sit with your family necessarily and sort of say, I'm really concerned that, you know, my motives for my protagonist aren't that strong in act two and they're changing by act three. And your family's just sort of sit there going, yeah, pass the sauce. So they would be my two bits of advice. Like,
great advice.
Finish something and get a writing group.
Brilliant. Thank you. I love that. So true. on the show, we also have a shout out question. But first, how can listeners connect with you on socials, any events you've got coming?
Yeah, so I'm under Troy Hunter Writer on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and weirdly LinkedIn. But you know, hey ho, but I'm not on Twitter. So I've abandoned Twitter. So yeah, people can find me there.
Great. And any events coming up?
I'm in the middle of planning some events for Sydney and Brisbane and Hobart. So I can, when I have sort of more concrete information about them, I can sort of share them on the socials. Yeah, my actual launch is on the 10th of April. So it's not too far away.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
Yes. Apparently you're emceeing.
State Library, 6:30 p.m. Fantastic. I'll put those up on the show notes. And would you like to shout out a book or two by a LGBTIQA plus author?
Yeah, the book I'm reading at the moment is A Man and His Pride by Luke Rutledge. So
yeah,
I'm about halfway through that, so I'm quite enjoying that. I'm actually going to go and buy the latest Armistead Maupin book this weekend. Those Tales of the City books were really, really important to me in the 90s, and so one come out is amazing. So they're the two queer that I'm reading or about to read at the moment.
Thank you. And finally, any LGBTIQA plus artist books, art shows, organizations, social media accounts that you just say hi?
The only thing that's really on my mind at the moment is I'm still recovering from seeing the film All of Us Strangers. So I know that's not quite the same thing, but
no, it is. That's spot on. That's great.
Yeah. I really quite liked the original book by Taichi Yamada. And coincidentally, he died just at the end of last year. So I'm a little bit obsessed about whether he actually got to see this new version of his film, that Andrew Haig version of his film. But if you haven't seen that film, it's astonishing. It completely broke me, but it's one of the most beautiful and quite profound films I think I've ever seen. So if you haven't seen it, that's one worth looking at. And you don't have to be queer to enjoy it, but it probably helps.
So that's All of Us Strangers. My eldest told me that it'll be very cathartic for me to watch. And I love Claire Foy. So yes, absolutely. Great shout out. Our closing question, Troy, is what is your hope for the LGBTIQA plus communities?
I've been thinking about this a bit, and I suppose ultimately that the community kind of sticks together and remains connected and safe. I know that because of some of the complex things that I write about in my book, you know, I know queer people are 4 times more likely to experience psychological distress and depression than the rest of the population. That goes much higher if you identify as trans. Self-harm, suicide attempts, all of these things are much, much higher in the queer community. And so obviously there's no easy answers for any of that, but I guess just as I said at the start, hoping that people do sort of stick together, remain connected for one another and help keep one another safe.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Gus and the Missing Boy by Troy Hunter is out now. So listeners, check it out. Thanks, Troy. Rob.
Please check out our show notes on Words and Nerds, Blarney Books and Art, and rwrmcdonald.com for links, reviews, and the interview transcript. Until next time, this is QWS Podcast.